expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. It is our special Easter Sunday edition. I hope that you are joining us on the way to church, maybe on the way coming back to church. A little early for that, actually. Probably just on the way there. We are live today because, as it turns out, it's a week before your income taxes are due. Yes, Easter and taxes, two words that you probably didn't think we were going to be talking about together on the show, and yet we are today. We wanted to give you a chance. There was so much interest when we taped our show with Bill, Mary, and Chet, our resident enrolled agent guest experts on tax, that we didn't get to those. Obviously, we had a taped hour with them, but there was so much interest when the show aired that we decided to have them back to do another show where you could ask tax questions. Because if you're like my husband, Sam, this is the week that you are doing your taxes. So 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK, online, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Of course, we will be taking your personal finance and your real estate questions as well, but I know that you may, if you're not in church, you're probably home with a stack of papers or maybe a shoebox, and you are thinking to yourself, it is a beautiful day in Atlanta, and I have to do my taxes, and we want to be able to help you. 404-872-0750 if you've got questions. Let me reintroduce our panel. You have heard them many, many times on the show. We have Bill Nemeth, an enrolled agent, Mary Brody, an enrolled agent, and Chet Burgess, an enrolled agent. Enrolled agents are licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. They have also done tens of thousands of returns for individual people, for corporations, strange cases, unusual cases, easy cases, and as members and leadership in the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. They also do some work with the National Association of Enrolled Agents. They keep their eye on what's going on with taxes nationwide. And in Georgia, although we've had a very quiet season up until very recently, there's been some changes that Bill sent me that we want to talk about today. Some legislative changes that looked like they were coming down the pike. So maybe we should start there. First, welcome to everybody. Welcome back.
Thank you, ma'am. Thanks very much.
It's nice to have you. So, Bill, 10 days ago, you sent me a note on House Bill 386, the Special Joint Committee on Georgia Revenue Structure, and you said we will probably want to cover this on the show. Why don't we start there?
Okay. Prior to House Bill 386 passing, Senator Perdue had put into place a very nice exemption from Georgia tax for senior residents of Georgia. It started out in 2012 with a $65,000 exemption and went all the way up to infinity in 2016. That was just modified by the bill that Governor Deal is expected to sign, which is going to cap it at $65,000 for people 65 and older.
So what do you think happened there? What was going on behind the scenes? Did they not want to compete with Florida for rich retirees? What?
If you read the paper, this whole thing came out of nowhere in about 3 days and was passed unanimously by one of the houses. So there was a lot of lobbying apparently going on for some of the other aspects of the bill, and I think this was just tacked on.
So what else was this I'm not sure. What else was this tacked on to? What was the main thrust?
Well, there's this big to-do about sales tax on Internet sales,
which
we were all supposed to be reporting anyway. There was always a place on your tax form where you could voluntarily pay sales tax on your Internet purchases, and we all watched people wink and go on when they went there. The other big thing was the birthday tax or ad valorem tax and casual sales tax on sales of cars between individuals. When the bill is effective, casual sales between individuals will have a fee tacked on it. The ad valorem tax, as we know it, which is based on the value of the car each year and is due on your birthday, is gone away. It will be, if you will, transposed with a fee of 6.5% initially and then 7% when you purchase a car. that is going to take the place of the sales tax. So if you step back, it's a net win for the consumer, but he pays a little more up front.
It's interesting. It's an interesting long-term strategy. Not quite sure why they've gone that way, but, you know, taxes will be taxes. So let's talk about the Georgia senior exemption, because we've spent a lot of time talking about this on the show and how amazing it was going to be, what a way for Georgia to be competitive with some of the other no tax states around for retirees. How many people do you think will get hit who are above that $65,000 a year threshold, or is it really a small number?
My estimate, it would be a small number. I'm trying to be one of them, but I'm unsuccessful so far.
Excellent. All right. What? Any other tax news? It's a lot of tax news that blew up out of nowhere. Anything else happening?
Well, the Georgia Department of Revenue is burdened because of state budget cuts, and this has been going on for a couple of years, and I would just let people know who have anything unusual going on, especially if you had to send in paper returns for some reason, or if you had to file an amended return. I've had a couple that people have been waiting months and months and months and haven't heard anything on, so, you know, they are short-staffed for the workload they're expected to carry, no question about it.
Okay, so everything is just going to take more time.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I would like to add one thing that sure. Is happening. Georgia Department of Revenue is sending emails to taxpayers asking them to submit documentation or take a online identity quiz survey. And it really sounds hokey, but it's true. And
it's so not. And this is not a scam.
It sounds like a scam, but it does. It's not a scam. And so people that get that email from Georgia DOR, check it out certainly very carefully, but it is legitimate. And they are questioning, you know, like people that have been filing together for 10 years, they want to make sure who you are. It's just bizarre.
You know, I have to say, I think it's really bad form, given that all of the states, Department of Revenue and the IRS have been telling people in the media for years, push out the note, we will never contact you by email. It's only going to be paper. And, of course, in an increasingly electronic world, that has to change. But it's going to be very confusing for people, and I think it's just opening everybody up to scams, right? Because you can make an email look like anybody.
Absolutely. And their email doesn't look very official.
Dumb, dumb, dumb.
So
go ahead, Chuck.
Just the listeners need to keep in mind the Georgia Department of Revenue, as far as we know, is the only tax agency doing this. So if you get anything that purports to be from the IRS via email, it is not. And you should forward it to the IRS. There's a special address called phishing, phishing, phishing at irs.gov. They want to see it.
Okay. So we should send this as well. You know, it would be helpful, actually, if the Georgia Department of Revenue, if they want to do this, if they would post a sample email that they're actually sending out online. Of course, then somebody would mimic that. Maybe that's a bad idea. I'm gonna delete that idea.
Okay.
All right, 15 minutes past the hour. Let's go take some calls. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. If you have tax questions for our guests, Janet joins us on the line. Hey, Janet, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hi, Janet. Welcome to the program. How can
Hi.
We help you today?
Well, I haven't had steady work for a couple of years, and so I've decided I'm going to go back to school and get a master's degree, a business master's degree, which I think will help me with my job search.
What do you do?
I came out of the news business. I used to work for a very large newspaper here in Atlanta, and I took one of their buyouts mm-hmm. in 2009. And I've bounced around I had a contract at a TV station on an assignment desk, and I had a contract for a year as a health editor, and I've been freelancing steadily as a writer, a business writer. But, you know, I haven't been able to nail down a permanent position. And
there aren't a lot of them around for people like us, I have to say.
Right. And so a lot of the jobs I see that, you know, if you've got a journalism background, they often will ask for a master's in either marketing or communications, and so I'm going to go back to Georgia State and get a marketing. They have a fast-track marketing degree, master's that I can get in a year.
Okay, that sounds good. What's that going to cost you?
About $33,000.
Wow, okay. Pretty big investment. And so what's your tax question?
Is that eligible for any kind of tax tax benefits?
Are you going to take out a loan, or are you going to pay cash for it?
I'm going to do a combination.
Okay.
Is that considered a career change, or, you know, is there any category that I can try to get some sort of tax benefits?
Is there any help for Janet? Is really what she wants to know, Bill.
Okay, Bill Nemeth would like to weigh in on that one.
Go ahead, Mr. Bill.
The fact is, she's going to the graduate level, so she either can. It wouldn't help her on Schedule A, primarily because she's self-employed. It's not deductible on Schedule A because she's changing career, so to speak, or at least that's what I heard her say. So the one thing she would get would be the lifetime learning credit. If she has a good tax bill, that would help her because it is not a refundable credit. It only applies against the tax you have. If you spend up to $10,000 on your education, you get a credit on your federal of $2,000. So,
Basically, though, I'm still trying to stay in the same business, but a lot of what people want, like this marketing degree, has a lot of internet stuff in it, and so if I'm just not changing careers, is there any tax benefit?
Then you can put it on Schedule A, subject to that 2% floor. And my opinion, here's my take on it. It will make you a better journalist if you have that additional education. It doesn't qualify you to be a doctor or anything else.
No.
It makes you better.
Okay.
So making you better allows you to put it on Schedule A is what Bill, I think, might be trying to tell you.
All right. Just curious. Thank you.
And Bill, walk us through the benefit. So let's say that Janet is earning, as a self-employed person, around $40,000 a year. And now she's going to spend this $33,000. Give all of us a little sense of what her tax bill might look like or the benefit that would accrue.
Okay. If she did the lifetime learning credit, she'd have $2,000 of credit. The other way, if she puts $33,000 on Schedule A as educational expense, she'll then subtract 2% of her $40,000 or $800. She would have additional itemized deductions of, in round numbers, about $32,000. Depending on her tax bracket, that may be the better way for her to go.
Okay.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Good luck. Let us know what happens. 19 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show. Special Easter Tax Edition. We have our tax experts here, Chet Burgess, Bill Nemeth, and Mary Brody. Happy to answer all of your questions today. 404-872-0750. You can tweet us online if you've got a quick question as well. Twitter.com/GLINK. That's how you reach us. 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
When God gave out rhythm.
26 minutes past the hour. Little Diana Krall for you this morning. Happy Easter. 404-872-0750. It's April 8th, so we're doing taxes today with our tax experts, Chet Burgess, Bill Nemeth, and Mary Brody. Enrolled agents, we'll go back for a quick call. Dan joins us on the line from Cumming. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good morning. Happy Easter to everyone.
Happy Easter back at you.
My question is, I have a situation where I had some financial hardship, and I had a SEP IRA a while ago, and I converted it to a Roth IRA, and so I've had to use that Roth IRA, and I'm still a little unsure of what the basis is. I've got a pretty good idea of what I rolled it to, but unfortunately, I don't have all the documentation I'm trying to track down. It looks like I'm going to have a refund, but I wanted to file an extension and make sure that I'm going to, you know, that I have all the right numbers. I'm curious how that works and what I can do for that situation.
I'm really glad you asked that question, Dan, because there are so many people who need to file extensions and they just have a week to get it done. So who wants to run down sort of the rules on the extension?
This is Mary. I would like to address that. The extension is a very good idea, especially since the basis of that Roth is not 100% clear yet. And it's an easy thing to do. It's Form 4868. You can get it for free online at the IRS, www.irs.gov. And the instructions are there on where to send your extension. There are different mailing addresses if you want to send a payment with your extension form, but it doesn't sound like you would have to. Although I'm wondering, have you looked at worst case scenario on that Roth distribution if you don't have all the basis to cover the distribution?
So I don't know if he has or not, Dan. What if he hasn't?
Well, I would probably send some money with your extension. Safe Harbor is 100% of your last year's tax bill. You look at line 60 on your last year's tax document, and that's at least a safe harbor if you've paid in at least that much for the current year.
And you always want to be sure, just in general, if it's not Dan, of course, but anybody else, you want to make sure that you really don't owe anything. Because if you are filing the extension and you don't send in money, isn't that when penalties and interest kick in?
Absolutely. Anything due after April 17th this year will have penalties and interest attached.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Mary. 28 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Tax Show. It is Easter Sunday. So glad you could join us. 404-872-0750. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Marvelous. You should care for me.
36 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the Elyse Glink Show live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. It is Easter Sunday. We are live and we are doing our tax show because guess what? Next week, your taxes are due. Well, I guess it's a week from Monday, but regardless, it's coming up fast and furious. And so we had our tax experts come back in to talk to you today. Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody and Chet Burgess, all of them enrolled agents licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. You can find them through the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, number 4GAEA.org. And if you don't want to find them, there's plenty of other ones in there as well. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go back to the phones. Johnny joins us on the line from Auburn. Hi, Johnny.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
To give you some background, a year ago when I did my state taxes for 2010, I had underwithheld by $2,500, a tad over $2,500. So I wrote them a check, sent it in, everything's fine. So this year when I'm doing my taxes, I notice on the Georgia state taxes on line 19, they want me to put the Georgia income tax withheld for last year. And I'm wondering, do I not write down the $2,500 check I sent them last April, you know, for under withholding from the previous year? Is there anywhere to put that $2,500?
All right.
Okay. Chet will handle that one. So you're talking about line 19 of which form?
On the Georgia Form 500,
mm-hmm.
Where I'm filling it out. You know, I'm putting all my information on there. I put the amount from my Schedule A on my federal for my
perfect.
Federal itemized deductions.
You should have put that tax payment on your Schedule A as state and local tax payments made during calendar year 2011.
Okay, I did that. Yes.
You did that. Then if you carry your itemized deductions total over to the Georgia Form 500, that will be in there. And Georgia is a state that does allow you to deduct your state tax payments on the state tax return.
Okay, so I will have already gotten credit for that by reducing my my taxable income, I guess, by moving that Schedule A information over to my state form.
Yes, sir. If it's in the Schedule A, that carries over to the state form, so you've already got the deduction.
Okay, so let me ask you one more. I kind of figured that. Yeah, I stayed awake most of the night one night trying to figure out where did I get credit for that. That finally came to me, but that's probably where. So when I mail in my federal, my 1040, and, you know, I attach my W-2s for my wife and I, and I'm retired from the Army, so I put my Army W-2. Do I put a copy of the check that I sent the state of Georgia last year, or do I send in my 2010 Georgia form, 500 copy of my 500 form? How do they know? How do they verify that I sent the state of Georgia $2,500 last year?
You don't need to document that with the tax return. Just hang on to those documents in your file, and on the off chance the IRS should ever question any of your itemized deductions, you would present the documentation at that point.
Okay. And one more question. If I ever reach a point where I actually get a refund from the state of Georgia, you know, $100 or whatever, then would I indicate, well, I guess I can cross that bridge when it happens, but I'm just wondering, would I indicate that I got a refund from the state of Georgia?
Yes, you probably would, assuming that you're not subject to that nasty alternative minimum tax. If you get a refund of a state tax payment that you have deducted in a prior year, that will be taxable income for the current year, and you would put that on the front page of your Form 1040 on line 10, where it says taxable refunds, credits, or offsets of state and local income taxes.
Johnny, thanks so much for your call. Chet, great answer. 40 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Steve joins us on the line from Dacula Heights. Steve.
Hey, how are you today?
Good, thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question about the county in which I live, who represents themselves as a taxing authority for the property in which I reside.
Okay, what county is that?
Gwinnett County.
Okay.
In Gwinnett County, new items have been part of my tax bill for many years, but the most recent is a new item to the tax bill, which has added the collection of sanitation in the state, I mean in the county of Gwinnett. That selection of that sanitation service is not a company of which I had a choice, and therefore it was put on to me as a result of the property in which I reside. Another line item that's on my tax bill that's part of the tax total is the collection of a fee for lights. We have lights in our subdivision. The question is, do I deduct the full amount of the bill because they are representative of the property in which I reside? If I live somewhere else, I would not be taxed these items. Or do I have to remove the items for sanitation and lights?
Bill would like to take a shot at that one. Basically, taxes are deductible on your Schedule A. Fees for services such as the collection of your trash and the lights are not deductible.
Okay. So my choice in the matter is not representative of the fact that it was imposed upon me.
No, sir. You take that up with your legislator, who was nice enough to vote for that.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us today. 42 minutes past the hour. 404-872-0750. Tamara joins us on the line. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
last year, my husband and I, we adopted a sibling group of three children who are special needs. And when we filed our taxes this year,
I just have to stop you and say that's an amazingly generous and marvelous thing to have done, to giving those children a home.
Oh, well, thank you.
It's amazing.
So we included the adoption tax credit, and because there were special needs, we put in for the entire amount. And we filed back in February because we had to mail it in. We couldn't electronically file.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gotten our state refund back, and we're waiting on the federal refund. Last week we got a letter from the IRS that said that our case had been chosen for review, and my question was, is there anything I can do to assist moving the process along, or is it just pretty much a waiting game? And do we have to be concerned that we wouldn't get the money?
I'd like to address that. Your return has been selected for further review. They're going to take their time doing it, and all we can tell you is to be very responsive when they ask you for documentation.
Okay.
And make sure that they're getting it. You can, depending on how you feel about fax versus mail, neither one is particularly wholesome when it comes to them saying they have it.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally like mail with a return receipt.
Okay.
So that I know they got it. And then I try to follow up by phone, which usually doesn't work, so I follow up by fax.
Okay. And then regarding the documentation, I know that part of the documentation that was required was court decree of adoption, which the lawyer gave us 9 copies, 3 for each child, and pretty much told us that we needed to kind of guard these with our lives, because if we went through all 9 of them, we'd actually have to get a court order to get the case reopened in order to get another court decree of adoption. So
just to get a copy of the court decree of adoption?
Yeah, we have 9 originals.
Wow.
In order to get another one. So yeah, it's a difficult process.
Well, I had no idea.
So we made the decision that we were going to send them an original one. We figured, we have 9, let's go ahead and send them the original. And then we sent documentation as to what qualified the children for the state of Georgia as special needs. So we submitted that, and I guess I'm concerned that they're going to come back and say, you didn't give us the court, you know, the court papers that, you know, the judge approved this adoption, and you need to send us another one.
I would send them a copy. You may be able to get a certified copy.
Okay.
Which would not go through the legal process, but may go through a recorder of deeds or may go through just notarized. Bill, do you think that she would need to send another original? Let's just assume they're this precious and this hard to get new ones. What do you think? She has already sent one to the IRS. What do you think?
It's been my experience. I always send copies and have never had them challenged. I don't have them notarized as being certified, and I've never had any problem, and certainly with regard to adoptions.
Okay.
As far as the state of Georgia, you're aware of the $2,000 credit per child adopted. Were these children in a foster home prior to adoption?
Yes, they were not. It was a foster to adopt situation.
Okay. Excellent.
And it was a state adoption.
I have had a situation probably 4 times now where the state of Georgia processes those very quickly. So
we actually have a check from this. We already got our check from Georgia. It's the federal government that I'm concerned about.
And I want to make the point that check occurs every year till the children turn 18. It is a perpetual credit, whereas the IRS is just a one-time credit.
Yeah. Okay.
So just see what the IRS wants. Be responsive. Follow up quickly.
But it's okay to send a copy then.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure. All right. Thank you.
Good luck. It sounds like an amazing time in your life, and we really hope it goes well. 47 minutes past the hour. Tim joins us on the line from Roswell. Hi, Tim. What's your tax question?
All right. Yes. Elise, I sold some of my stock, and on my brokerage account, form 1099,
mm-hmm.
When I try to put it into TurboTax, they're asking, like, what is the, what did you purchase it for?
Right. What's the original basis?
Yes. And I'm having a hard time. I bought it over a 7-year period.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm having a hard time trying to find that number.
And that number has become ever more important, has it? I think, Bill, you and I were talking about this. Who wants to take this one?
Chet will take that on. Yes,
okay.
It's of even greater importance this year because the IRS had completely revamped the Schedule D and created a brand new form 8949, which I'm sure you've probably already looked at, where you make your original entry of the information. Did you purchase all the shares of stock with the same broker?
Well, I purchased it it was payroll deducted out of my check when I was working for the company. So it just occurred over a 7 to 8 year time frame.
So okay. Did you by any chance keep your check, your paycheck information stubs from that purchase, or did you get an annual summary from the company of the purchases?
I think I did, but I only sold like 4,000, so I'm trying to figure out, like, did you sell them at the 4,000 at the did you buy them at the $100 price or the $170 price? Because it fluctuates, the price of the stock fluctuates.
Right, okay. You can identify specific blocks of stock to sell. However, in order to claim the cost of a specific block of stock, the IRS requirement is that you must identify the block of stock to the broker when you send in the sell order, and you need to have a written confirmation from the broker that that was indeed the block that was sold. It's called specific identification.
Oh, wow, I didn't do that.
And if you didn't do that, then the standard IS rule is what's called FIFO, first in, first out. You'll have to go back and look at the first however many thousand shares that you bought and look at the cost of those shares will be what you'll have to report.
Could he go back, if he bought some with each check and he knows the date that he started doing this, where could he go to track back the price of the stock in that particular week? Because identifying it by week would probably be close enough for the IRS, right?
If that's the best you can do, if you don't have the specific documentation of each purchase, then a reasonable methodology frequently will be accepted, and you could go back and get a legal paper and put out, you know, it was every week or every month, you know, what was withheld from your pay, and reconstruct the 7 years to see how much you paid in. And then when you want to identify a specific block, there are a number of online resources, bigcharts.com website, and I think Yahoo Finance and others have historic stock prices where you can go back and look up the open close, high and low on any given day, and you could average a week or even a month that way.
It's probably the best way to go. Tim, thank you so much for your call. 51 minutes past the hour. We've got plenty of more tax questions, and luckily for you, a lot of tax answers as well. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour, Easter Sunday. Happy Easter, everybody. We are doing a special tech show, 404-872-0750 is our number. Darlene joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Darlene.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
We're all good, thank you. What's your question?
Well, I'm going to be getting my Social Security at 62 at the end of the year, but I'll still continue to work. But many of my friends are already collecting retirement or Social Security checks, and they're continuing to work at different jobs, some of which take taxes out and some don't. But to their surprise, they've received letters from the Georgia Department of Revenue or the IRS saying that they owe more taxes. So our dilemma is there a simple, easy-to-understand book or anything to help us navigate these uncharted waters of multiple streams of income during retirement so that we don't end up owing more taxes?
So it's a terrific question. Bill, Mary Chet?
I've been living this dream for a number of years. I took Social Security at 62. That said, my wages were capped at about $14,000 a year, or I would have to pay Social Security back for my benefits. So part of it is your earned income is going to be capped from the time you're 62 until the year you turn your normal retirement age, which is going to be when you're 66. That year you can make about $35,000, and the year you're 67, your earnings are unlimited as far as being penalized by Social Security.
To them, it doesn't matter where the money comes from. It's $14,000 a year up to the age 66, and then $35,000, and then unlimited after that.
Well, no, I want to make sure we understand it's earned income.
Earned income.
As opposed to retirement benefits or something else.
What about money from a 401k distribution from there?
That will not count to penalize her.
Okay, so this is just, I've got a part-time job at Starbucks.
Yep.
And you're penalized there. Does that seem, Darlene, does that seem to make some sense to you?
That helps because they've been wondering if their retirement checks are calculated against them, against their Social Security and their earned wages and stuff. So that does help.
I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you so much for your call. Happy retirement and happy Easter. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink with our tax experts, Chet Burgess and Mary Brody and Bill Nemeth, and we'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Happy Easter and a Chag Sameach. See if you are celebrating Passover as well this week. 404-872-0750. We are doing our tax show because even though it's Easter next week, your taxes are due. And we wanted to give you the benefit of the wisdom of our tax experts. We have with us in the studio today Bill Nemeth, an enrolled agent, Mary Brody, an enrolled agent, and Chet Burgess, an enrolled agent, all of whom are involved with the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. You can find them and many others online, the number 4, GAEA.org. Our number here at the station, 404-872-0750. Chet, I know during the break you were looking up, we've gotten a great question about what kinds of information is available. Darlene is getting Social Security at the end of the year, but she and her friends are working part-time or not, and they're so concerned about how the taxes get counted against what they're earning versus the Social Security income. Did you find a resource during the break?
I did, even though this is kind of off tax, but the Social Security Administration actually has a publication that's titled How Work Affects Your Benefits. And you can get a copy of that from the Social Security Administration. This publication has a number. It's 05-10069. And to obtain a copy, you can call the Social Security Administration at area code 410-965-2039.
Okay, 410-965-2039. Can you also download it online at SSA.gov?
Yes, if you go to SSA.gov and you click on publications and do a drop-down menu shows topics, and you can get to it that way, and you can also search by numbers. If you've got the number 05-10069, you can do a search, and you can print out a PDF online.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you so much for doing that quick research. Such an interactive show. I just love that. Speaking of which, we got a tweet 2 minutes ago. Oh, sorry, now it's 5 minutes ago from a guy named RD. And his tax question is, he sold a home in Georgia and bought one in Mississippi in 2010, and he got the home buyer tax credit. Then he got laid off in 2011, moved back to Georgia for a job, and he wants to know if he has to pay back the tax credit.
I'm a little confused. He got the credit on the Georgia home or the Mississippi home?
It sounds to me like he got the credit on the Mississippi home. And remember, it wasn't just a first-time home buyer's tax credit. There was another tax credit. So hard to remember. There were so many tax credits back then, and they were all changing back and forth. But wasn't there another tax credit?
Yeah, there was a long-time home buyer credit.
That's right.
Yeah, to have not bought a house within the last 6 years or some such thing.
Right. So I'm not quite sure. There was also an opportunity if you were buying with somebody who had never bought a home before. They got a first-time home buyer tax credit. They got, so you would have gotten half, the $4,000 instead of the $8,000. So it sounds like maybe he needs to give us a little more information.
The one thing to remember, if the house is no longer your primary residence, you're supposed to pay back the first-time homebuyer credit. That's the first law.
Even if it's not, even if it wasn't the one from 2008, wasn't there one? There was one in 2008 or 2009 that was more like a 0% loan, where that one had to be paid back in installments. How long did you have to? I can't remember anymore. How long did you have to live in the homebuyer tax for the homebuyer tax credit? It was like three years, wasn't it?
3 years before you did something.
All right,
and
well,
if you sold it at a profit, you had to take part. The profit part is what you had to pay back for the first time home buyer credit.
Maybe maybe you could get the fella to email us or send us some little more information. Be happy to answer the question.
All right. So what I have just done is tweeted him back as we speak. and while we wait for him to tweet us back, let's go back and answer another question. We had another call just come in asking about the Volunteer Income Tax Association, VITA. They help people, seniors particularly, do their income taxes for free. Do either of you have a number for them?
Not offhand,
No phone number. I think you could Google it, I'm certain.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think IRS.gov actually has it on their homepage. So we're going to... Whoever asked that question, stay tuned. We're going to get to that one in a minute as well. All right, 12 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to the phones. Doug joins us on the line from Canton. Hi, Doug.
Hey, how you doing? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the program. Happy Easter.
Yes, my question is, I've been paying a federal tax every month, about $700 a month for the past, starting last year. I was wondering, is there any credit I can get for that at the federal level and at the state level?
No, unfortunately. If you're paying federal taxes and you're likely paying interest and penalty on top of it,
yes.
My guess is it's an installment agreement.
Yes, ma'am.
Which is a great way to go because they're not going to harass you or garnish your wages or your bank account. But no, there's no write-off for paying federal tax.
Okay, they show your gross amount that you're getting paid, but it seems to me it doesn't take into consideration that you're also paying $700 a month that you're not actually seeing. They're actually taking out my check every 2 weeks, $350. So I was just wondering if there was anything I could do as far as when I file my tax this year to show that or reflect that.
No, it's just a payment of old federal tax. But if you happen to have the same problem with the state and you're paying state tax, that is a write-off on your itemized deduction, Schedule A.
Okay, I had that. I paid that off 2 years ago. I never claimed any of that. So is it worth going back and trying to claim that?
Absolutely. Do the math. Okay. Yeah, have a go at it. Absolutely.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. 13, now let's make it 14 minutes past the hour. So at the IRS.gov website, I typed in VITA for Volunteer Income Tax Assistance and Tax Counseling for the Elderly. A whole page came up. To find a VITA site near you, you can call 1-800-906-9887. 800-906-9887. And then there's the TCE program, the Tax Counseling for the Elderly. And for there, if you are 60 years of age or older, and they specialize in questions about pensions and retirement issues unique to seniors, they will also do free tax counseling and give you free tax help. And to find somebody there, you can call 888, which is toll-free, 227-7669. 888-227-7669. And if you are going to go for tax assistance for either VITA or TCE, you're going to need a picture ID, Social Security cards for your spouse, dependents if you have them, yourself, your taxpayer identification number, proof of foreign status, your birth date, wage statements, and all the rest. 404-872-0750. If you have tax questions, we'd love to answer them. Joan joins us on the line from Dunwoody. Hi, Joan.
Hey, yes, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for taking my call. I just heard someone say, one of the gentlemen that's there, and I want to make sure I understand correctly. I'm retired, took early retirement last year. I'm 65. If I pull out my money from my IRA, that doesn't affect my monthly Social Security, or it does?
It should not have any effect on your monthly Social Security.
And I don't mean just like, you know, taking out monthly installments. I mean withdrawing the whole thing. It doesn't affect the Social Security.
Okay, there is one factor that I'd like to mention. Depending upon your income level, today at the federal level, your Social Security may not be taxed at all. As your income rises, more and more of your Social Security will go over into the column where it's taxed at your normal federal tax rate.
Right. I understand if I make, like, this year, over $37,000, I'll get taxed on that earned income. But what I'm saying is my IRA, is that included as income since it's prior to taxes?
Well, it is now income, and so it's going to factor into whether any of your Social Security benefits are taxable.
That's different from if your Social Security benefit will get reduced.
Oh, okay. I'm confusing the two. So I could be taxed for the IRA withdrawal, but it won't affect my actual Social Security monthly benefit.
Right. That is correct.
Okay. Thank you all so much.
You're welcome, Joan. Happy taxing. 17 minutes past the hour. Joe joins us on the line from Roswell. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good morning. Afternoon, I guess.
Good afternoon.
The question I have is that my previous employer, I had long-term disability, a short-term long-term disability, and unfortunately I've turned into a long-term disability. And according to what my employer told me is that the disability payments are not taxable. Now, the insurance company is now paying me, and they're going to be offsetting that with SSDI as soon as that gets approved. My question is that do I have to pay taxes on that on the disability from the employer?
The real question there is whether the employer paid your insurance premiums or whether you paid your insurance premiums.
They paid a first portion, and then I paid a portion. I paid with post dollars.
Some of it.
For the other piece of it, yes. For the increased value, yes.
Okay. It doesn't make it easy. It's not going to be an easy calculation, but likely you will get a 1099 from the insurance company saying these were your benefits. Here's, you know, you have to include these in tax. And if you were partially paying the premiums on the long-term disability policy, that percentage of the benefit is not going to be taxed. So you have to make an adjustment. In other words, you've got to go back and figure out what percentage you paid of the premiums and offset the income that's going to get reported to you.
So give an example, Mary. If he paid 50% of the benefit, it's 50% of whatever
of the tax. Mm-hmm. So you're drawing now, and you have a $10,000 benefit that you've received during the year. If you had previously paid 50% of that premium with post-tax dollars, then 50% of that $10,000 would not be taxed to you this year. And you'd have to make an adjustment. You'd have to show all the income on your tax return and then make an adjustment, and I would make it on line 21.
Okay, so you know, if I understand you correctly, then because the insurance company who's sending me my disability, they have said that that they will not be sending me a 1099 because I had paid with post-tax dollars, so therefore that there wouldn't be any income tax required to be paid on it. But and two, what about the SSDI portion of it?
I'm not 100% following you there on the SSDI, but if the insurance company is not going to send you a 1099, there must have been something else going on with the premium payments with the employer. Maybe they were included in your income and you just didn't realize it. But the insurance company, you know, pretty much has control under if anything is reported to the IRS or not. And if it's not reported, I'd say don't include it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That would be much nicer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'll go along with that. No question.
I'm there.
The insurance company also, on my behalf, has filed, you know, for the SSDI, and just recently went for an exam. So now when that gets awarded, that is going to be offsetting what the insurance company is paying me. So that SSDI also would fall in that same category as not needing any taxes paid, correct?
Right. You're talking Social Security disability insurance. Right. That's right.
Yeah. So you're, it sounds like it's fallen the right way, that your employer set it up correctly for you, especially with what's happened, and you're going to benefit from that, which is good because it sounds like you've had a bunch of really tough breaks, and this might make it just a little bit easier. 21 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, special tax show this Easter Sunday. Stay tuned, 404-872-0750, and we'll be back with some more tax answers next on News Talk WSB.
Expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Now you say you're lonely.
News Talk WSB, I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us today. Happy Easter, everybody, and Chag Sameach to those of you celebrating Passover. We are doing our tax show, and of course, because I can't read the calendar, I was thinking, oh, it's April 15th, right? Because that is the day that it is every year, but it isn't. This year, you get two extra days due to, I think, a funky holiday in Washington, D.C. On the 16th, the actual day your taxes are due this year is April 17th. It is a week from Tuesday, and that'll give you a little bit extra time. We are doing our tax show today. We have our tax experts here, Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody and Chet Burgess. They are all enrolled agents. Enrolled agents are licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS, and they have all done collectively tens of thousands of tax returns for corporations and for individuals. And they're happy to take your tax questions today for another half hour at 404-872-0750. You can also tweet us your question or just send it to go to my website at thinkglink.com, and you can send it there as well. We did get an email from the guy who had the question about buying in Mississippi with the home buyer's tax credit, and we're going to get to that next. So stay tuned for more tax questions and tax answers here on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Something that I'd
find
like
her expert
to
advice
you.
Anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Tell you what it's all about. It is without a doubt swinging the latest style.
36 minutes past the hour. Little Diana Krall for you this Easter Sunday. Happy Easter, everybody, and Chag Sameach for Pesach. And welcome back to our tax show, because your taxes are due a week from Tuesday, and we want to make sure that you're ready. So in the studio with us, we have Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody and Chet Burgess of the Georgian Association of Enrolled Agents, number 4GAEA.org. Our number here at the studio, 404-872-0750. Dale joins us on the line. Dale, what's your tax question?
Yes. What I've got is I normally have been filling out my 1040 with a 2106 employee business expenses.
Okay.
And I went and saw someone, and they just briefly told me that I was doing that incorrectly, that I should go over to a Schedule C.
Okay. And you want to know if that's true.
Yeah, one of my questions is kind of twofold. Number one is, I believe what they're telling me is accurate, and I have missed a couple of deductions. But I would like to know, do you know of a resource where I can go and someone can physically, you know, when I'm sitting in front of them, actually show me how to do this?
Okay.
Well, first of all, Dale, what is your occupation? What do you do?
I'm in outside sales.
Okay, and how are you paid, with W-2 or 1099?
Both.
Why both?
Okay, I get paid with a W-2, and then I have a part-time job that pays me with a 1099.
Oh, separate job. Okay.
Yes.
And you're outside sales for the separate job?
That is correct.
Oh,
I'm outside sales on both of them.
Okay. Okay, well, that kind of clears up the question. If you're a W-2 person, you have to use a 2106 to claim unreimbursed business expenses. If you get a 1099, you're considered self-employed, so you would use Schedule C to report the income and the expense from that. And you have to be careful that you separate your expenses, particularly mileage and whatnot, you allocate only those expenses for that particular income to the proper form.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sounds like you could do both. So,
okay, well, that's what I thought. And the person that I had looked at the taxes said that I need to go back and I can amend from 08, 09, and 10 as long as I get that in before April 15th.
Well, the 08 return is the only one you have to get in by April 15th, yeah.
Or April 17th, right? Is
well,
it this year April 17th
you'd
or
have,
not?
You'd have to look back and see if 08 was an April 15 year or an April 16 year or whatever.
It's 3 years from the due date.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Including extension. So that's a good reason to always file an extension, even if you don't need one.
Yeah, and there is one wrinkle on the Schedule C, and that is there are a few W-2 employees who are what are called statutory employees, and there's a specific section of the Internal Revenue Code that covers them that allows them to claim their expenses on a Schedule C rather than the Form 2106. And those tend to be life insurance sales reps and route drivers for, you know, like your bread delivery truck folks. But your W-2 has a box on it that must be checked that says statutory employee in order to use the Schedule C to deduct expenses.
Okay. All right. So do you know of any source that I could go and someone could help me with my tax?
Just to talk to somebody, you can usually get a, you know, free consultation. I wouldn't recommend it right now with a tax professional, but you could file an extension and make an appointment for after April 17th for a free consultation. But the IRS actually has very good publications on am I an employee, am I not an employee, you know, how should I file. That would be one resource to use, just, you know, quick resource.
Okay. Well, that answered my question, and I wish you and everyone there a happy Easter.
Thank you to you as well, Dale. We appreciate the call.
Happy Easter Bunny to you, too.
You know, it occurs to me that Dale has a situation that a lot of people have. You know, in this Great Recession, people have been cobbling together different jobs in order to make things work. Ideally, if you'd want to keep those expenses separate, wouldn't you want to identify a certain credit card or a specific method of payment just for that particular job?
Absolutely. That's the perfect thing. And if you can have a separate bank account, that's also good, too. And then that way there's no question that the funds moving through that account or through that credit card are related to the self-employed business.
We had a good question internally about, well, if I use my credit card for all my expenses, do I really need to keep my receipts? And the answer is resoundingly, yes.
Darn.
Yeah. You go to Costco and buy some things for the office, but you also pick up some things for the home. And if all you have is a credit card receipt that says Costco, you know, credit card charge, the IRS is not going to give you the full deduction unless you can produce the receipt.
Interesting. So, you know, it pays these days. There's all kinds of ways to scan in your receipts. There's a wonderful new program I've been using called Expensify, which allows you to take a picture with your camera of your receipt, and then it goes basically to an online cloud software program where you can then, you know, sort of mix and match the receipts to different expense accounts. There are just lots of really interesting technologies that are inexpensive to use and really make that kind of easy. So, sounds like maybe somebody wants to take advantage of it. Expensify, it's kind of a cool thing. 41 minutes past the hour. Let's continue on with our call. Sam joins us on the line from Gainesville. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Elise. How are you?
Fantastic. Happy Easter.
Thank you. Same to you. My question is, I'm about to sell a fairly large piece of property, and I wanted to look at any path that I might could take to help alleviate some of the federal and state taxes that I'm going to have to pay on that.
Is it investment property or personal residence?
No, it's actually land that belonged to my grandfather that was deeded to my dad, who deeded it to my mom, and then she deeded it to me. And it's been in our family for quite some time.
Okay, and what kind of land is it? Is it investment property? Is it a commercial property?
No, it's just regular agricultural land. It is.
Do you farm it out, or does somebody else farm it?
We get the hay off of it. That's about it. And then there's a good bit of wooded area that you know, we have sold timber off of and that sort of thing.
So
but it is.
Does anybody live on it?
No.
Okay. Are you buying a replacement property? Because I would think that we'd like to talk to you a little bit about a 1031 tax-free exchange.
I haven't really thought about that.
Well, let us talk a little bit. Bill, Mary Chad, I'm not sure who wants to take this, but a 1031 exchange is the pretty much the only way I know that they might be able to protect some of that taxation. Do you want to give a sort of a quick summary?
Sure, I'll jump on that. You're allowed to defer the gain on a piece of real estate if you reinvest the funds in another piece of real estate. It doesn't have to be agricultural land or vacant land. It can be a building, a combination of land and building. And I believe the window is 6 months, isn't 180 days. You have to identify the property, the replacement property, within 180 days of the sale.
I actually
okay.
think it's faster than that. I think you have to identify in 90 days.
It's
and
not. It's 180
away.
Total.
One,
up to 90 days
close.
Before mm-hmm. you actually sell to it within that range to identify the property, and then within 90 days of the sale closing, you have to have the money into the new property, and you have to use a qualified intermediary. You cannot take possession of the money on the sale. The intermediary takes possession of the money for you and then executes the purchase of the replacement property. And then your low basis from the property you own now will carry forward into the new property and the tax will be deferred.
Okay.
So that's one option. And then I can talk to you about options if you decide to go ahead with the sale. There are a few things you can think about that can help soften a little bit of the tax blow that involves some tax planning, and you probably want to work with a financial planner or an estate attorney on that.
Okay.
So let's just go a little bit further on the 1031. So you would hire a 1031 company, preferably a really good one that, and on my website I have a whole bunch of things that they should do in order to protect your safeguard your money. Like they should put it in its own account, and that account should be insured, and not everybody follows those things pretty carefully. You'll also need a real estate attorney to help you.
Yes.
But you could take that money and you could buy, let's say, a commercial building and bring in some regular income. So you've
okay.
deferred the taxes on the sale of the property, and as long as the new purchase costs at least as much as what you're selling for, right? So let's say you sell the property for $1 million. You could buy a $1 million commercial building or series of commercial buildings that are generating income that you would then be able to defer the tax, but now you're getting some income from the property.
Okay. That sounds great.
So that's one possibility. Chet, why don't you talk a little bit about maybe some ways if he decides he doesn't want to be a landlord?
Yeah, if you decide that you don't want to be a landlord and you're looking at a significant tax bill, one of the things you can do is you can ask a question, do you make charitable contributions on an ongoing basis? Is that something, you know, do you give money to your church and a college, a local hospital? One of the things you can do is you can kind of lump charitable contributions all together in 1 year. There's something called a donor-advised fund. These are operated by all of the major mutual fund companies. And what they do is they take an investment from a taxpayer and they invest it, you know, in a diversified portfolio, and then they make charitable contributions on the advice of the original investor. But the benefit for the taxpayer is if you put a lump sum, let's say you put an amount equal to your next 5 or 10 years worth of expected charitable contributions to all the charities you normally give to, you can deduct that entire amount in this year when you sell this property and help your tax problem for this year. And then in the future, 5 to 10 years out, you make your regular charitable contributions from the donor advised fund.
Okay.
So that's one of the techniques. And good estate attorneys, estate planners can talk to you about others. If you have children and grandchildren you'd like to make gifts to, down the road, some of the money. You can look at various types of trust arrangements that retained annuity trust grits, they're called. Some of them can involve, again, a charity where you'll make your donation to the trust will be set up. A charity will receive the money for the next 5 or 10 years. You'll get an upfront deduction, and then at the end of the term of the trust, the principal will go to your children or grandchildren.
Okay. Just one quick question. What happens if you just take the money and do nothing with it? What happens then? I mean, other than just try to put it in banks or CDs or, you know, add to my IRA or whatever.
Well, since there weren't any buildings, depreciation should probably not be an issue here. So basically, the difference between your net proceeds after sales expenses and the basis way back when, you know, the original family cost of it, will be a long-term capital gain, and you'll owe the feds 15% of that and Georgia 6%.
Well, does he get a stepped-up basis, Chet?
Well, he said it was deeded to.
Yes.
His grandfather to his grandmother to his, which...
Well,
which,
was it inherit? But he might have meant... Sam, did anybody inherit this property over the years, or was it just given as a gift while people were alive?
It was given to them while they were alive. I mean, it was always a deeded... You know, I mean, my grandfather deeded it to my dad. When he passed away, he had already deeded it to my mom. So... it just kept on going down through
succession. So the basis is going to be your grandfather's original cost when he bought it.
Right.
So if you'd inherited it, it would have been a lot. It could have been a lot different. You would have received it at the stepped-up basis. So instead of basically costing $500 and having to take the entire thing as a profit, it might have been when your grandfather died and gave it to your, you know, left it to your father. Maybe the value was $10,000, and then when it went to the mom, it would have been $15,000, and when it went to you, it might have been $100,000. Right. But now it'll basically be zero. Or whatever they paid for it, and you're going to have to try and find those records. I don't know how you would find them, or if you know them.
I only have one record that my grandfather paid like $623 for 23 acres back in 1927. I mean, that was just, you know... there was no money back then. So,
a trip to the county courthouse is probably in order.
Yeah. You'll be able to check it back that way. But if you decide, you know, to be really clear, if you decide not to go the route of a 1031 tax-free exchange, and you should speak with a real estate attorney about that definitely before you close. Because once you close and you receive the money, you can't go backwards. You can't make that 1031 happen, I believe. So you want to do everything ahead of the closing and decide which way you're going to go, and then have the closing. Otherwise, you might be out of luck. 51 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Easter Sunday Tax Show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Easter Sunday, Passover, and taxes. Gosh, what a combination. 404 872-0750. Enjoy a little of your matzah prep. You know, if you eat matzah and you eat your tax forms, it almost tastes the same. Let's see if we can squish in one more call. Vicki joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Vicki.
Hello there. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you, too. What's your question?
Help me. I filled out my taxes last night online with one of those popular software packages. I hit the button. I went to clean up my paperwork and found out I left off a 1099-R. Now what do I do to fix it?
Okay. How do we fix it?
Well, the fix is easy. I'll start with easy. You file a 1040X. You go get a paper return. It's got to be done the old-fashioned way because it cannot be e-filed. And you get a 1040X, and you now include the missing income and refigure your tax, and, you know, maybe you'll get a refund. Who knows? But if it's a balance due, you still actually have time to pay it by April the 17th. And if you get the money in by April 17th, there's no penalty or interest.
That was my question, because from refiguring it, I owe them more. So I wanted to know if I should pay it. Just go ahead and send them what I think I owe.
Yes.
Based on my, you know, what I've figured out.
Refigured.
Or just mm-hmm. wait until, you know, they send me a nasty gram.
No.
No, huh?
No.
Okay. I will do that.
Now, you don't want to pay the taxes and penalties, right, Mary?
That's right. And don't forget the state, too, because I don't
know. Right.
I
got to do both of them. Okay. I'm just so mad at myself, I can scream. Ah. And one more question. I just heard you earlier say that that you can go back and recoup from previous years. I had a legal suit against my employer, and I lost, unfortunately. But I did incur legal fees, and
Nikki,
that was...
Nikki, we're just running out to the end of time, but I'm going to have Bill and Mary and Chet take your question off air, this last question, because we just have 30 seconds left. So thank you for your call. Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody and Chet Burgess, thank you so much again for a wonderful tax show. Really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And should we just have people find you through the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents?
That would be great.
That's
all right.
Fine.
Number 4GAEA.org is the place to go if you want to find Bill, Mary, or Chet. This show is going to replay tomorrow morning early, 3 a.m. to 5 a.m., and we're going to have it up online and at iTunes later this week. So in case you have any last questions or there was something you thought you heard you didn't understand, you'll be able to go to thinkglink.com and check it out. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Again, happy Easter, Chag Sameach for Passover, and good luck doing your taxes. We'll be back next week with a regular edition of the Elise Glink Show. Have a great week, everybody.